to another EbizQ podcast.
Hello, this is EbizQ's Peter Schoff, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with J.P. Morgenthau, the Senior Principal Architect for Kinetic North America and an independent IT industry analyst for jpmorgenthau.com. Listeners may also be quite familiar with J.P. from his frequent contributions on the EbizQ forums, where his opinions are always well worth reading. So first of all, thank you so much for joining me today, J.P.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Now, you recently wrote an article, A Better Metric for Analyzing the Value of the Cloud, and it concerns your concept for a new metric to compare cloud computing. Can you explain this new metric and why you think it improves the enterprise's decision-making when considering cloud computing?
Be happy to. The article goes on in quite detail explaining all the different aspects of the metric, how to compute it, what are the parts of it. But essentially what I'm trying to say in the piece is that return on investment and total cost of ownership, and even regarding the cloud, CapEx versus OpEx analyses are all fall short in understanding real value and real cost. And so what this focuses on is a metric that I define as total cost of service. And what I've done is break down the cost associated with delivering a particular service from IT perspective. And that service could be any, not just software services, but it could be help desk. It could be your own internal infrastructure as a service. It could be anything that the business is offering to internal consumers. And so it goes on to describe why it's important to be able to cost things from a service perspective, and also how that same metric can be used to decipher whether the service you're providing is actually equated to the value that you expected. And so it's very pragmatic. It helps the IT management to better tell the business how it's spending the money, where it's invested the money, and whether it's investing it appropriately, whereas those other metrics are ambiguous, and they are typically not tracked longer than 1 year out.
Well, you said it's pragmatic, but it's also quite timely in the fact that obviously most companies are fairly concerned about cost right now. Now, you said that cloud computing has a possibility for making a huge impact in the future, but at this point, cloud computing is not yet there. Can you explain this?
Sure. So the value that people see today really, to me, doesn't go much further than what we've had since 2000, when service providers first started appearing around internet applications and hosting. I think there's maybe a few more features, different pricing models, but essentially they're offering the same value proposition as we've had for years around hosting. I think the real value proposition that we're going to see, hopefully due to the cloud, is as more businesses begin to trust the cloud and share the parts of their data that is non-proprietary in the cloud, and then the models that we can use to analyze that data, join that data, I think we'll begin to see things and be able to measure things in a way of how we work today, and that will shatter our current views about the way we believe the world works. Very much like the work of the Freakonomics group with regard to cause and effect. I believe that, you know, the limited data that we have today certainly manages what our view of the world is, and what we think the world, the view of how we work today is. And by having all the data from all these different, both public and private companies available to analyze, we'll be able to discern patterns that we never knew existed.
Very interesting. Now, in a recent presentation on the future of cloud computing, you noted that relational database technology is the ball and chain that is actually holding back the cloud. What do you mean by this?
Well, so that model or the vision that I just described requires data to be treated very differently in a cloud environment. And people who manage data in IT tend to think about relational models and capabilities of relational databases. But essentially what we're talking about here is the ability to ensure information assurance, also information quality, making sure that where the data has been and who's touched it. I mean, you have to be able to identify and provide this information in support of the data itself. And in effect, data becomes wrapped, if you will, in a fingerprint. And very much like an RFID tag would be used to track products in a warehouse, you would want to be able to have this fingerprint of this data and also be able to track where it's been and who's seen it. And I think those are important future aspects that the relational model just doesn't support from a volume and from a usability perspective. We need new models of data management and data storage in order to support that vision.
Very interesting. Now, can you please explain your concept for dynamic SLA and exactly how does it differ from SLA today?
So if you think about what we've done, where we have been successful, where we have good examples of service-oriented architecture in use in the building and deploying a service, it's still a very expensive proposition around deriving and deploying and bringing that service to the consumer. We could talk about IT service, but just for a moment, I want to step outside just the IT mindset, right? You could think about bringing Fios into a neighborhood and how expensive it is to initially bring that service in. You have to break ground. You actually have to lay fiber optic cable. You have to drive the service connectivity. I mean, it's a very expensive proposition for deriving that service. Well, in a similar vein, even building out a new IT service has a lot of those similar overheads. And it's an expensive proposition. Where we need to go, where we need to be in the future is to enable derivation of new services in a rapid fashion that matches the speed of and needs of an emerging marketplaces that allow services to be created and used in a transient manner and deliver consumers big value in a short time without having to necessarily have a service that has extreme longevity for it to make sense. And that's what I'm talking about dynamic SOA is that ability to drive those creation of those services that deliver a big value and don't have to have that supporting longevity in order to break even and get a return.
Definitely makes sense to me. Now, what are the steps that you think are needed to bring about a revolution in the cloud?
So clearly one of the first things that we need to have happen is we need to get better. And I'll use cybersecurity as the overarching term, but it's really about higher data quality and greater data assurance. So being able to tag information, being able to represent and track where information goes on the internet and where it's originated from and who's been accessing it at a very fine detail. That's very important. That's really got to be first step one. When those assurances are there, then I believe businesses will bring more data to the cloud because they'll have greater control over ensuring that only the stuff that is publicly available, that they want to share publicly, will be available, and that the stuff that they want to keep private and confidential will also remain private and confidential. And so you see some of the concepts of that occurring in things like hybrid cloud, stuff that stays behind the firewall in the house, stuff that goes out into the cloud, how do I integrate that? So that model and maturing that model, seeing how to actually make that occur in a real fashion with real information assurances, that's an important step. And then finally, building the model around the community that is going to do analysis on that data and how that information that's been now brought into a deeper analysis can become a new product that has all the supporting evidence behind what created that product. And now, for example, if you look at a great example of this, we have already non-cloud, which is credit reports. A lot of information aggregated from a lot of sources. There's questionable information on many people's reports. Where did the information come from? How high is the quality of data? We've heard stories about a man who got arrested because of his credit report having incorrect information on it from somebody else who had the same name and birthday as him. These are obviously issues that need to be taken care of. But if you take that model of what we've done with the credit report and you create an aggregate product out of it, which is the FICO score, and you think about doing that on how supply chains work, how productivity in the organization, you know, what levels of productivity there really is, how much real GDP do we have? Actually being able to compute GDP by looking at the actual real data from the companies instead of processed data from the government that, you know, is really so far away from the actual source that it's not even real. Those are amazing, you know, pieces of information that would be available to us, and we'd be able to change and modify how we are responding to that data, you know, once it's available, once we have this infrastructure. Does that make sense?
Definitely. Very, very interesting. And definitely something EBISQ is going to keep its eye on because this is interesting stuff. This is Peter Schoff having spoken with JP Morgenthau. Thank you so much for joining me today, JP.
Thank you for including me.
This has been an eBizQ podcast.